Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf.
Welcome to our show. This is so exciting because today we've got all kinds of holiday tips. We've got a very sad story that hopefully ends up very happy. You'll have to listen so you know what happens. We're going to talk a little bit about the difference between dogs, like service dogs, therapy dogs, ESAs, companion dogs. So confusing. And we're going to even go into some gifts for you pet lovers out there and all kinds of really fun stuff. And we'll end up today with some viewer questions. So today we're going to start out with holiday tips. You know, we're getting into the holidays now, and everybody's got a different thing they're talking about. They're going, you know, oh, don't give your dog turkey. No, turkey's fine. Don't give your dog mashed potatoes. Oh, you can give your dog mashed potatoes. So I want to go into some things for that. The typical holiday tips that I recommend, and it's different for cats and dogs because cats and dogs, even though we love them and they're both furry and can be very energetic and entertaining, they have very different systems. So, for instance, those of you guys who are going to visit and your dog has never seen a cat litter box, you better make sure he doesn't come out with some special treats from the kitty litter box. Why do dogs want to eat cat poop? Well, there's a reason. Cats do not have the ability to fix nitrogen. So there are nitrogen-fixing bacteria that most organisms have. And that what that means is that those organisms, kind of like the bacteria in your stomach and your digestive tract, particularly your digestive tract, help digest food. So actually E. coli, which is in all of us, actually has a purpose in your bowel because it helps to break down the food. And as a matter of fact, I think it's about 80% of when you defecate, it's actually E. coli bacteria and not food. So it's a little bit interesting with that. But why do dogs eat cat poop? Well, cats and cat food particularly is extremely high in nitrogen because cats are very poor at fixing nitrogen and absorbing it. So their poop has a lot of nitrogen, a lot of protein, a lot of really cool stuff because they really don't have the greatest systems for digesting certain things, including nitrogen. So that is why your dog smells that out. And the problem is, it's gross enough if you think about the poop. But what is that poop always covered in? Ah, crunchy coating, which is, what are we talking about? Kitty litter. So if your dog goes in, and especially if you're at somebody else's house, your dog walks in to a room with that litter box and eats that. If he eats a couple of pieces, I mean, besides it being gross and you're definitely not wanting the dog to kiss you for a while or ever, you want to make sure that the dog doesn't get an obstruction or impaction because a lot of those clay litter boxes, the clumping ones, those litter, different ones that they have where it like kind of, if the animal urinates, it kind of gets, turns into like a rock. That stuff is very bad not only for dogs, it's also bad for some cats because they have it on their feet, so now they're licking their feet, and they're getting all that in there, and it can block them up. So if your dog has never had access to a kitty litter box, might be a good idea to keep an eye on them. Maybe close that door on the litter box or ask the people if they can move the litter box into a room that the dog doesn't have access to. But I see that a lot, actually, at this time of year when people are visiting friends. The people who have a cat and a dog, you guys already know this stuff, but the people who are just going to visit, you know, your friend, your relative, wherever it is, you may not know. So you really got to be careful. Same thing if you're using sand. A lot of times dogs will dig out sand in like a sandbox because there's, again, there's cat poop in it. And cats like to cover up everything. So now it's got all that sand, another way that they can get an impaction or obstruction. So we just want to make sure that you guys know definitely, definitely not to get involved on that kind of thing and let your animals get into something kind of yucky. All right, so another holiday tip is if you have people who are going to be coming over to your home, and we know everybody wants to feed the dog from the table. All right, well, you know, you can let them kind of enjoy themselves, but make sure that you monitor what the dog is going to be eating. So a kind of a neat thing for those people who have, you know, grandma or grandpa or Auntie M or
Uncle Henry or, you know, Dorothy or whoever it is who's coming over for Christmas or the holidays, have those people like an actual little container. Like, you actually provide the treats they're not supposed to give. So I had one very interesting client. They're awesome. They live nearby, and they had this giant dog named Cameron. He was a massive mix, like, oh, my gosh, dog must have been 250 pounds. He was the size of an English Mastiff, but his head was just the size of, like, a Buick. And besides the fact that Cameron stared at me for 52 minutes, and, yes, I remember because we were watching the clock as this dog sat growling next to my face for 52 minutes and then finally decided I was fine, went away, and then I was the only one who could handle him, take him to the vet or anything else. But Cameron's daddy would not listen when I kept telling him, please, no wheat, because your dog has allergies and it's exacerbating his aggression and it's also exacerbating his allergies. Please, please, please don't do it. Well, you know, typical guy, right? Well, I can give him if I want. So he was giving his dog pretzels. So every time Cameron would eat pretzels, he would be itching. He'd have ear infections. He'd get another hot spot. He'd get aggressive because certain things like wheat can cause inflammation, not only in the skin, but in the brain as well, which can cause behavioral changes. Hello, we have a dog with a bite history who's 250 pounds. We don't need to do that. We tried, his mommy and I, tried for weeks and weeks to get Dad to stop giving Cameron food from the table, especially these pretzels. So what I suggested to her was get your husband gluten-free pretzels. They taste the same. They're actually really good. Some of them are really excellent. And put the gluten-free pretzels there so your husband can feed Cameron all the gluten-free pretzels he wants. This way, at least the dog doesn't have itching, allergies, hot spots, and any exacerbation of his behavioral issues. So, you know, we're looking at things, and that's sometimes the best thing to do. So if, let's say, you're at the kitchen table, put a little bowl of carrots out. Put a little bowl, you know, the little tiny carrots, baby carrots, or cut them up. Put some gluten-free treats, like gluten-free pretzels or gluten-free cookies, whatever you want, and put that there for people who are not going to listen and are going to give the dog something anyway. We're going to go into a little bit more about the health and nutritions and all, but a lot of it is, it's not that potatoes are necessarily bad or mashed potatoes, but a lot of people put garlic in them. So you have garlic. Well, garlic, you know, some people say it's okay. It's really not great, and onions definitely not great, but they're progressive damage. It's like cumulative. So if the animal has a little bit, it's not going to hurt them necessarily. But if he has it over and over, or he has a larger quantity, it could. Like if your puppy's one little tiny, you know, chocolate chip, he's not going to die. But if he eats a bag of them and he's a little dog and they're semi-sweet or dark chocolate, you're going to have a problem. So sometimes it's easier to just help people to do the wrong thing. At least your dog isn't going to have a problem from it. And getting into that is, you know, I want to talk about the difference between, like, a good gift for a pet lover and a, you know, maybe a not so great gift. We all hear about, oh, you know, it's, you know, get rid of grain, you know, grains are no good. The issue is that most of the grain-free foods that are out there and grain-free treats have legumes, and legumes can and have been scientifically, they've been studying a lot more recently, have the ability in some dogs to give them or exacerbate dilated cardiomyopathy, which is DCM. If your dog is a boxer, if it's a ridgeback, if it's a larger dog, or even a cavalier, that animals that tend to have either large hearts, hearts that work very hard, or any kind of heart issues, they can cause or exacerbate dilated cardiomyopathy. So not that you want to have wheat, but other things are okay, like rice is okay, tapioca is okay, quinoa is okay. Check with your vet, although most vets really don't know and specialize in nutrition. But, you know, look around and you'll see you can do things like potatoes are okay, but like soybeans are not good. Chickpeas, beans particularly, are not good. They not only cause gas in an animal,
which can cause bloating, right? And that can cause a surgical emergency where the dog's stomach can flip. It's a gastric torsion or a twisting of the stomach. And that can be life and death. That's a very, very, very serious thing. So if you give your dog something, just make sure that you double check it. You don't want to use things that are going to create a lot of gas, and you don't want to use peas, beans, and a lot of legumes. Things like rice are okay. Brown rice is okay. Organic is good because rice actually has a lot of arsenic in it. So white rice has less arsenic than brown rice. But again, vary your protein sources if you have a dog who is able to do that. Vary your grains so you can use brown rice sometimes. Remember, brown rice makes things move through your intestines. White rice stops it up. So if your dog has diarrhea, don't give him brown rice because all that roughage is going to make it kind of messy. And if your dog is, you know, constipated, then you can give him things like pumpkin. Pumpkin's kind of a cool thing. But just check with your veterinarian. Make sure you know exactly what your animal is able to have. And, you know, making sure that all those things are going to be good for him. So I wanted to talk about something right now. You know, we're in this wonderful holiday season right now. And there's a story that I want to tell everyone. Get your tissues out. As you all know, I've been training service dogs using behavioral techniques that I've created for over 40 years. And I've trained about 1,300 service dogs to this point. My staff is amazing. And we've done every placement I've done, or I know the people. And some of them, well, they're all wonderful and they're all special, but some of them are the ones that just really rip you up until everything is okay. You hope it's all okay. And today I'm going to tell you a story about a little boy named Charlie. Charlie was a little 3.5-year-old, lived up near the Detroit area. And I got a phone call from his dad one day. I didn't know him. He called me up and he said, you know, my son has cancer. And, of course, I deal with that a lot. And I myself, as a cancer survivor, want to help every cancer survivor there is, right? Or cancer person to be a cancer survivor, to take over the disease instead of it taking over us. Well, the gentleman tells me the story about his little boy. And his little boy was no longer being cooperative, getting his daily or weekly infusions, but at that point they were daily. And he would scream out, "Mommy, Daddy, don't let them hurt me. Mommy, Daddy, don't hurt me." And I don't know anything that's more heartbreaking than a child with any kind of issue like that, but cancer. And then the child was so terrified, because he knew that when he got these infusions that he was going to be sick. He knew that this was painful. This was a terrible thing. This was scary. It was terrifying. And his poor parents had to hold him down because they wanted to save his life. But he didn't understand that in order to save his life, his parents had to do that because they loved him so much that they had to do that. And I don't think there's anything worse than a parent going through a tragedy like this with a child. But this one really broke my heart. Really broke my heart. And within 2 weeks, we had an amazing service dog, a Rhodesian Ridgeback, that I went up personally to bring the dog up and brought one of my assistants with me. And we came up on this beautiful little, you know, bald-headed, big, giant, blue-eyed little boy, 3.5, who was really excited to meet us because I was bringing him a doggy. He didn't know a service dog. He didn't know the difference. He just knew that he always wanted a dog and that he was going to get one, but he didn't know what the dog could do for him. I'm going to fill you in on what the dog could do for him. This little boy who was terrified of going in to get his chemotherapy because he knew he was going to be sick and it was painful to get poked with a needle, even through his port.
It's not a fun thing. Well, I had trained that dog. And the dog was in training with me for over 2 years. But in that 2 weeks, I put that dog in like triple and quadruple training. And I trained the dog to lay across his waist. And I said, Charlie, we're going to do this really fun game. And your little dog, well, not little, your 90-pound dog, is going to lay across your belly. And it's going to make you laugh. So put your arms down by your side. And I gave the dog the command, and the dog laid across this little boy, and he started giggling. And we did that a whole bunch at their house for a day and a half. And then the next day was his infusion. And he started panic, and he could barely even walk because he was so weak at that point. So he was actually holding on to his ridge back for stability, too. And we went into the infusion room at the pediatric cancer hospital. And Charlie got up on the gurney, and he started having a problem. And I said, up, up, and I told the dog what to do. The dog got up, laid across the gurney, laid across his belly, very gently, and across his arms. And he started giggling. And we made it fun, and we were saying how silly she was, and she was trying to kiss him, and how much she loves you. Well, long story short, he didn't even know when that needle went in. And that's how he went through the next several years of treatment with that dog, making him laugh and creating not just a safe and healthy body for him when he was 7 years old, but creating a healthy human. And that's a big thing that people forget. And that's why our service dogs, you know, noble service dogs, they're such amazing dogs, because the dogs are like little Jewish mothers, and they want that person, they want their individual to be happy, and they'll do anything. And I have the pleasure of telling you that this young man, I think he's now 10, he is healthy, he has a whopping head of hair on him, and he still has his dog, and I just got a picture of them this morning. And I'm telling you this because everyone within earshot should realize how darn lucky you are. And it doesn't matter who won the election. It doesn't matter your horrible neighbor next door. It doesn't matter the guy who flipped you the bird on the highway. It doesn't matter that your washing machine broke and you can't afford a new washing machine now. You know what? You're alive. You're healthy. Your family's healthy, and God is good. There's a lot of good in this world, and we have to all look for it. And nothing in the world is more sobering than hearing bad news about a loved one. Well, at this holiday season, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is, wherever you are, be grateful. Be grateful, because there are a lot of people out there who would be very grateful to swap with you just to have a healthy, happy family, to have back the loved ones they've lost, and to have good health where they don't have it now. So please think twice about getting upset. Think twice about being angry and quick to temper with people you love or even just people you meet. Because we never know what it is that someone's going through. But be grateful. And I'm so grateful for this young man who changed my life about 6 years ago. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we will return in a few minutes. And welcome back. Well, we're going to continue on talking a little bit about service dogs and what service dogs can do. Now, I told you a story earlier about a little boy in the Detroit area whose life was forever changed, and he still has his life, and a great one because of his service dog. But there are so many things that service dogs can do, and this is one of those questions that I'm always getting from just people I meet, friends, neighbors, people are in the supermarket, and people ask me, well, like, what can a service dog do? Well, in order for me to explain to you what a service dog can do, I think I need to explain and basically elucidate this giant chasm of what's the difference? Oh, a service dog, therapy dog, it's all the same. No, they're not. So we're going to start with actually the lowest level of just regular dogs, which is a companion dog. So your companion dog can be well-behaved or ill-behaved. It can go and bite people. It can go and lick people. And as long as you keep that dog from harming another individual or animal, nobody cares. But what happens when we need that dog because we have maybe some anxiety, or maybe we just feel a little bit, well, you know, anxious or concerned about something? Maybe we're at college or we're in a situation where we're a little bit upset about things. So the things that an emotional support or ESA can do, and that emotional support animal can be anything, because there's no legal reason you would have to take that dog or cat or lizard out with you. So an emotional support animal typically is not allowed. They're not allowed in public places like a service dog. But an emotional support animal is basically, you know, listen, everybody who has animals pretty much has them because we love them and they make us feel better and they actually love us. You know, the old joke about, you know, lock your friend in the trunk for an hour and lock your dog in the trunk for an hour and see who's going to be happy to see you. You know, you have that. And animals are just so forgiving. They're such wonderful and godly creatures. And it's so nice when you're able to, you know, really just enjoy that companionship. So an emotional support animal does not need any training because it really is just a step up from a companion dog. To me, every companion dog, like every pet, is an emotional support animal, because whether they're tropical fish and you're watching them and you feel more comfortable and more relaxed by watching them, or you have a pet frog, like I've had every pet in the world, or you have a cat, or you have a dog, or you have, you know, that poor guy who had the little squirrel and they killed the squirrel. Oh my gosh, that was terrible. So an ESA or an emotional support animal can be any animal that makes you feel better, but they don't have legal rights. Now, in some housing, they consider an emotional support animal that you can have it in certain types of housing. I'm not going to go into all the laws because that would be like probably 10 hours of a show and I wouldn't even be able to cover it all. But the interesting part about that is emotional support animals, a lot of times people will lie and say they're service dogs. The issue with that is an emotional support animal doesn't have training, doesn't need training. So as soon as you go into a public place and your dog is barking at everybody, or it's lunging at a real service dog, which I see that all the time, or, you know, the dog is peeing on you know, lifting its leg on everything, or you have it in the cart. No, you cannot keep your dog in the cart. There are certain health code violations that occur when you have an animal in an area where food should go. So an emotional support animal is that next level. Then above that, we have a therapy dog. So therapy dogs are, again, they're not emotional support animals, and they're not service dogs. So a therapy dog is a dog who has some training. It's usually limited. They need usually about 8 hours of training, but they can have more, and some people really do a wonderful job. Some people's therapy animals are not typically very good with other dogs, so they'll go just by themselves, or they don't like children, there are good organizations, including Noble Service Dogs. We do the same thing with the therapy dogs, but most of our therapy dogs, actually all of them, are service dogs, and we put a different jacket on them so they don't have their vest. And they can go into hospitals or kids. We've had them in schools, so they're actual service dogs that can go places with the kids because they're trained, task-trained, but our dogs are task-trained for multiple types of individuals. So it's kind of a little bit of a cool twist on it. Now, then let's get into service dog. A service dog is individually task-trained to mitigate a disability. Those are the dogs that if somebody says to you, oh, you can pet my service dog, I know it's not a service dog. If they offer ID and go, oh, yeah, this is my ID, it's not a service dog. A service dog does not require or there's no requirement for the owner or handler of a service dog to show identification. The Americans with Disabilities Act only allows for two questions. That is, first one is this a service dog required because of disability? Yes or no. If it's no, then that's the end of it. Is it required? Is it a service dog? Yes. What tasks is the dog trained to perform? That does not mean that you have to say, oh, I have seizures, but you can say the dog is trained to alert to seizures, or the dog is trained to alert to blood sugar, or the dog is trained to alert to whatever it is, you know, whatever the other, or the dog is a mobility dog. But only the people who are potentially in the ability or in the way of your, like, stand in your way, if you want to go into place, like the, let's say, a manager of a store who asked you that, yes, you have to answer. But if the average Joe Schmo on the street goes, well, is that a service dog? Why do you need a service dog? What's wrong with you that you need a service dog? I usually just, you know, I'm not going to say something nasty, but I would say, you know, ma'am, what's your bra size? No, I would not do that. But I would say, well, that's really rude. You know, I don't ask you what's wrong with you, what kind of health issues, and that's kind of rude. But typically, the only people who will ask you and are allowed to ask you are people who are allowing or disallowing you from going into a public location. And again, there are different laws and regulations on that. We're not going to go into that. But a service dog is a dog that can go into the hospital and stay in the hospital with the child, like this one did with the young man in Detroit. And all of these different things, they're different dogs. Dogs and miniature horses are the only allowed service animals. So just for you to know, no cats, no peacocks, no chipmunks, no gerbils, hamsters, bunnies. Sorry, it's just dogs and miniature horses. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. So when I tell you what can service dogs do, service dogs can do all kinds of things. And there are some very bad organizations out there, and I've certainly seen most of the ones that I've seen are not good. They are not reputable. They don't really train the animals to do what they say. And then there are some really great ones, and there's probably about a dozen really, really great organizations that actually do what they say. But a service dog can check low blood sugar, high blood sugar, so hypoglycemia or diabetes. A good service dog can alert to certain types of seizures, because most seizures they cannot alert to, but some of them, certain people, including noble service dogs, we definitely see the seizure alert, but it really depends on the type of seizure. Seizure response is easier because that's once it's happening, the dog can get things or can keep a person from harming themselves when they're flailing around, things like that. Dogs can be for mobility assist. A dog can keep you from falling, for vertigo, for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, where sometimes somebody touches or bumps you and you literally fall from the pain. So dogs, a good service dog agency will specialize in certain things. Even like what we do at Noble Service Dogs is we actually train the dogs, pre-train them with quite a few skills. And you can always call if you need, and we'll be able to help you out with that. But we also custom train the dog to the individual. So it's not that we have one dog, and this is a problem when you call a company and they go, oh, yeah, we have a dog ready. That's like my saying, I'm going to introduce you to my best friend, and I'm only going to introduce you to one person, and you're going to marry that person. And it doesn't matter. It's an arranged marriage. There you go. So it's not that it can't work out, but chances are pretty low that it is going to work out. So we have at any given time about 40 to 50 dogs in training, and at 2 years roughly for each one to be trained, you can imagine. So we have a couple of two, three every month that come due. Sometimes more than that. Some of them are a little quicker. Sometimes we have more dogs. But it really depends. So those service dogs can do for multiple disabilities. We had a young lady who was blind, had autism, and had a kidney disease and blood sugar issues. And we finally, it took us a while, but we finally got a couple of dogs trained for it, and she chose the dog, and she's just doing great. So it is possible to train one dog for multiple disabilities, but somebody's got to really know what they're doing. We do everything behaviorally, so it's not like you have to tell the dog, oh, dog, I'm a six-year-old with autism. I'm going to run across the street. Not, oh, by the way, I'm nonverbal, so keep me from running across the street, because that's not going to happen. So you have to teach the dog to kind of over control that situation. So even if the child's trying to run, the dog has to know, aha, mom didn't tell me it was okay for me, the child, to run across the street, so I'm going to prevent the child from running across the street. That's pretty cool. So basically, service dogs can do all kinds of incredible things, and it's really pretty amazing to see what they can do. So that's your education on service dogs and on service dog therapy dogs, ESA companion dogs. So we are going to take one more little quick break, and we will be right back with gifts for pet lovers. Stay tuned. And welcome back. And we are going to talk about some really fun gifts for pet lovers. Whether you just got your own pet, or you've got a pet for your pet, your kids or your family members, you know, everybody wants to buy cool stuff. So let me give you some of the things that you don't want to buy, especially for dog lovers. If somebody just got a new puppy, don't buy them squeaky toys, because squeaky toys not only encourage dogs to kill things, that's the ones who go out there and kill squirrels and chipmunks and catch everything, it also has a choking hazard, because most of these things are not made for puppies. And a lot of dogs will just chew up and rip up. They'll kill the squeaker. They'll, like, beat the heck out of this thing, pounce on it and chew it and kill that. And what they will do is they will actually kill the squeaker. Now, once they kill the squeaker, what that means to the dog is, I killed that vicious little varmint, and now I am going to, because, of course, it was going, eek, eek, eek. Well, now the squeaker dies, right, because the dog killed it. The dog doesn't say, oh, I killed a squeaker, and mommy is going to get a new squeaker, put it in there, and sew it up so I can do the same thing again tomorrow. But no, that's not really what happened. The dog thinks it killed the animal. So what does it do? It rips open because it wants to eat the guts of it. I hope you guys are not eating lunch or dinner now, because, man, this is not going to be pleasant for you. But maybe some Pepto-Bismol will help. So, again, go back to this. So we don't want squeaky toys. Also, the squeaker and pieces on there can become foreign bodies, and somebody's going to wind up on Christmas Eve with a $10,000 surgery to open up the dog and remove the pieces that you gave for a gift. So let's not go that way. You know what a great thing is? Getting things that the dog can chew. Bully sticks are really good. Just got to watch them at the very end, so that the little nub at the end, that some dogs will try to eat that and gobble it down. It will break down eventually, so it's okay like that, but you do want to be careful if you have a really aggressive chewer. So you just get the bigger, thicker ones. Those are great gifts. They're a little pricey. There are also beef esophagus or trachea. Those are great. You don't have to give a whole one. If you get, let's say, a 12-inch or 14-inch long esophagus, you can actually take a good bread carving knife and cut it into smaller pieces. Again, it's a natural material, so it's less likely to cause a problem. So for my big Ridgebacks, I cut one of these 14-inch esophagus into, I put four cuts in it, and each of them gets that. It's also kind of high in fat and fiber, so, you know, you don't want to give them too much. And be careful if it's an older dog that you're giving somebody a gift for, because you don't want a lot of fat or a lot of really high protein, because as animals and people get older, It's harder for us with our pancreas. It's harder for us to process all that gallbladder, too, with people, to process all that fat. And same thing with dogs. And also a lot of protein is harder for the kidneys to process. So if it's an older dog, you might want to stick with, like, some cute little treats. And listen, there's some great recipes that do not include wheat flour or corn that are made with, like, oatmeal and tapioca flour and some of the, like, the King Arthur brands and the Red Mill. There's some really good brands, and you can do one-to-one on a lot of those substituting. Make your own treats, and, I mean, those are fun. Those are fun if you have kids and it's a rainy, crappy, snowy day or something. You know, you can make things and put them in cute little baggies and bring them to your friends with dogs, and the dogs will love them. So a couple of other things that you want to be careful. Rawhides. Now, rawhides, the material itself is not always the problem. It's the shape. So the cheap ones that are made in China, don't buy anything made in China and give it to your dog. Give it to your ex-spouse. Do not give it to your dog or your kids. Just not good stuff. So what I would suggest you do, they have these things are called beef cheek rolls or beef cheek slices. What it is, it instead of it being from the body, which is a very hard, the way they make it, it's very hard, and it's almost like you could hit it with a hammer, and, I mean, it wouldn't even dent. Those are dangerous because especially the shape of them, if your dog gobbles them up, sometimes it's in a triangle or there's a sharp edge on it, and it can harm their intestines, even their stomach, and it can become an obstruction or impaction. So be careful of those. But these beef cheek rolls, not crazy expensive. They're really good, and I just got these amazing ones my dogs, like, go nuts for. They got them tonight. They get a different main treat every night. Sometimes they get esophagus. Sometimes they get a Himalayan chew that I put in the microwave, and I cut a little slice out of it for each of them. They love those. They're great for their teeth. But these are all things that, you know, are healthy treats for not only your dog, but for other people's dogs, and people will appreciate it. Don't give people things like balls or tennis balls. Human tennis balls have chemicals in them that are not great for dogs. Doesn't mean your dog's going to have a problem from it, but over time, it's like having petroleum, right? We wouldn't want our dogs to lick gasoline. And again, going into that with onions, mushrooms, garlic, chocolate, macadamia nuts, those are all bad. And be careful if there's any fluid on the garage floor, when you go in somewhere on the driveway, because propylene glycol, which is the main component, propylene glycol and dipropylene glycol and ethylene glycol, those are all in like antifreeze. Those are the things that are toxic to dogs, and they don't get them sick right away. So I hear that a lot from people. Well, they'll call me and they'll go, well, my dog had this yesterday and he seems fine. Yes, but it takes weeks sometimes for the crystals to form and for your pet to get sick and pass. So if you suspect that, make sure you contact poison control. There is an animal poison control, and some pet insurances actually cover that as well. But also, what's kind of a good thing to know is check your emergency vets that are open where you're going. So if you're traveling somewhere, especially if the people don't have any animals, check out emergency vets so you at least know where they are, so that God forbid there is an emergency, you know that there's a place to go, so you don't have to like be scrambling when you're in your worst moment where your dog is having issues or your pet is having issues. So those are all kind of important. And then another really good gift for, you know, for pets is doggy boots. They have different sizes and styles of doggy boots. You can get something like that. A little doggy coat. They have some really cool, fun things. Sweaters are okay for some of the smaller ones, but if it is a breed that has longer hair, it can make it matted sometimes, especially if they get a little bit wet. But check with your the people who you're going to visit and just ask them questions about, you know, anything that dog might have allergies or anything like that. There's some really fun stuff out there for pet lovers. Okay, the next thing we're going to talk about, you just got a new pet for your Christmas, for your kids. Remember that new pets, whether it's a goldfish, or it's a hamster, or a bunny, or a cat, or a dog, they're hopefully going to last more than a day. So remember that when you're buying a pet, assume that when your kids say, but Mom, I promise I'll walk the dog every day. I promise I'll feed the dog and clean up every single time. And then a week later, you're begging the kids to do it. So a lot of times I tell people, instead of buying or adopting a pet at the holidays particularly, contact your local rescue. There's some great ones out there. We had 11th Hour on once. We had Incredible Pups on. There's some wonderful, wonderful rescues out there. And contact a rescue and say, hey, I'd like to be a short-term foster over the holidays. Because a lot of people who foster animals go away for the holidays. So if you're going to be home for the holidays, then it's going to be fantastic because you can have a dog for a couple of weeks while somebody who's fostering is, you know, on vacation. And the nice thing is you can see if your kids are really going to do that. When I used to train all my young riders for dressage and equitation for riding, horseback riding, I don't care how much money Mom and Dad want to spend, I would say, I am not going to allow your child to own a horse until that child leases a horse for at least 6 months or a year and takes care of it. What happens? Everything, the novelty wears off. And we don't want a pet to be a novelty that wears off, because then now either you're taking care of the pet or the pet's going to be given up to a shelter or rehomed or whatever. And if it's a dog particularly that has any behavioral issues, those are going to intensify when they're not being properly taken care of. And those animals are going to wind up either euthanized or relinquished to a shelter. So that's why I say it's a great idea. If you want to get a new pet, foster something. Make sure that your family can handle that kind of dog. Make sure nobody's got allergies to the dog. And the best part of that is foster fails. Maybe you find a dog at your local rescue or shelter and you foster that dog for a couple of weeks or a month and you say, wow, we just love this dog. He's great. You can adopt him. And now you know the kids are going to take care of him. You know your husband's not allergic. You know your wife's going to, you know, be happy about it and, you know, joyous about the dog and not be like, oh, my God, I can't believe you made me get this dog, and now we're taking care of it, and I'm the only one taking care of it. Do things that make sense and think about things before you do them. So remember, pets are not for holidays. They're for life. And if you're not sure that your life is going to fit in well with that animal, foster. And I guarantee you, you can call a couple of rescues, find out a good rescue. I mean, Incredible Pups, 11th Hour, those are two really awesome rescues. There are a ton of them that are good, but there are some that are not so good. So look them up, go on their social media, and look at what they say, but you will see the vast majority of them want to do the right thing for the animals. Sometimes there'll be a lot of history on the animal. Sometimes there won't. Most of the time, listen, I've been down, I don't know how many times, to Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Louisiana, all, where all these dogs come from. And it's not the dog, because we all pull from the same basic places. But the key is some of the rescues will do what I don't like, which is, oh, we'll meet on the side of the road. But they don't know that animal, so they have no history on it. And if you have young kids, that is not a good way to go. Most of the ones that I deal with, the rescues are great. And what they'll do is they'll put the new dogs in with an experienced foster. And the dog will be there at least a couple weeks, sometimes a month or two. And then you can take the dog from there. So now you at least have a history. You know the dog is good with cats. You know the dog is good with kids. And, of course, we're always going to teach our kids, do not stick your face near an animal. Don't stick your face near a person. But definitely don't stick your face near an animal. But you, at least then you can foster, do temporary foster, short-term foster. And if you fall in love with the animal, great. You can adopt it. And it'll be wonderful to foster fail it. So that is an option for those of you who are grappling with kids who are like, oh, come on, I wanted a dog for my whole life. You're 7. You don't have a whole life yet. So that's kind of a cool way to do it. The other thing is get the small pets. Like get a bunny for your kids. Get a hamster or a guinea pig. Yes, they do live a while. Like my rabbit, my one lived 12 years, which is really long for a rabbit. But most of the time, they're about 5 to 7 years for a rabbit anyway. And then if the kids are good and they're taking care of the animal, at least you know that the, you know, the animal portion of it is going to work out well. Or, again, do the short-term fosters, which are great. We are going to take one more quick break, and we're going to come back with viewer and listener questions about traveling with your pet. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back. We are going to, as promised, do the listener and viewer questions right now, which is kind of a cool thing. We have two of them. They're kind of related. The first one is from Ron in New Jersey. Ron, I wonder if I know you. I think I might know who you are. Ron wants to know if he can travel with his pet and how does he handle that at hotels and lodging. Okay, so Ron, one of the things that's important is there are a lot of really cool websites that will list, even one called Wyatt's List, WYATTSLIST.com, that will list places that are pet friendly. The best thing to do is just fess up. You're going with your pet. There are a lot of Airbnbs who are good and a lot of regular bed and breakfasts that are really pet friendly. So I think rather than lying about having a service dog and then having people be really upset with you and give you bad ratings if you're on one of these websites, one of the nice things is that there are a lot of great places that are pet friendly. There are some of the big hotel chains, I won't plug them, but the big hotel chain, that they actually give you an extra blanket for your dog. They give you a food bowl and a water bowl and treats, which I think is just really amazing. So there are a lot of things to do pet-friendly, but make sure your pet is hotel-friendly, because if your dog lifts its leg on something or if you're not cleaning up, please, if you have animals, please clean up after your animals, because eventually what's going to happen is these places are not going to welcome our pets. They'll have to welcome our service dogs, but they will not have to welcome our pets. So please be good about that. Don't leave poop all over the place. There's also, while we're talking about that, those of you who have recreational vehicles, the Love's has actual, it's a gas station, but they have really cool stuff. I love Love's. And some of the TAs are also, but a lot of the Love's, you can actually go to, they have little dog parks, like little doggy rest areas along the way, so you can actually take your dog off leash and let it potty. And again, please clean up after your pet. So we do that a lot when we're transporting service dogs from our facility. We have a beautiful, beautiful ranch in Missouri. When we're transporting there to New Jersey or there to California, whatever, we always look for Love's and to these other really cool truck stops that have dog parks. So I don't know if you guys know that, but there are a lot of really cool pet-friendly places. So that is definitely something, Ron. I would suggest the Love's. I would suggest calling some of the hotels, and actually you can even just go on the internet and search for pet-friendly hotels. Some of them will charge a small pet cleaning fee. I suggest that you, when you call, is tell them that your animal is well-groomed, that it will have had a bath, and it will not be stinky, and that the pet is very well-behaved. But please make sure your animal is well-behaved. The other thing about that, Ron, is please make sure that you don't let your animals off-leash assuming they're going to be just fine because you do it at home, because the animal is going to pick up on other smells. There are other animals around. There are people around. There may be food laying around. I was somewhere, it was really shady, but I had to stop there in Maryland. Nothing against Maryland, but it was a really bad city there. And my dog was sniffing a hypodermic needle on leash. So thank God I had my dog on leash. But you don't know what's there, and you don't know what kind of food. You don't know, you know, if somebody's, if there's broken glass somewhere because you can't see it. So even though your dog is the best trained dog in the whole world, and, you know, you're, you know, Joe, fantastic dog trainer, when you go other places, you don't have control over that dog. And the worst thing that could happen would be for that dog to find something else and, God forbid, get attacked by an animal, or worse, get hit by a car, or have, you know, an incident with another animal or person. So let's be smart. Let's not do things that are, you know, kind of risky when there's no benefit. I always have a risk-reward policy. The reward better be worth the risk. And when I'm looking at my animals, there is nothing worth my dogs getting hurt, nothing. So I won't risk it. So, Ron, I hope that helps you with your travel with pets and at hotels and all. And then I also wanted to go into, I have Verna, who in Texas. And Verna asked if there are any pet-friendly restaurants, or how can she train her dog to be better behaved in public places, which is a great question. There are cool places like Home Depot. I think Lowe's does also. Tractor Supply, which is great. You know, where you can take your animals and they are pet friendly. Things like, you know, the big box stores, Petco, PetSmart. Most of these places will allow you to, you know, have your dogs there. Now, if your dog is not well behaved or you're not sure how it's going to be, make sure the dog is on some kind of a, you know, good, nice, strong, either martingale collar or something like a gentle leader that's going to keep the dog under control. I do not believe in prong collars, shock collars, choker chains, all those crazy pulling and aversives and squirting them and kicking them. And, you know, they're animals. They don't deserve that. And if you have to resort to that, you probably shouldn't have an animal, okay? But Home Depot, Lowe's, Tractor Supply, Petco, PetSmart. So rather than trying your first time in a restaurant when your dog's never been in there, or going to a place that does not typically allow dogs, even if they're service dogs in training, take your animals to different places. Now, one of the things you want to do when you're training a service dog, Verna, is make sure that you're not keeping your dog focused on avoiding people as much as you are ignoring people. There's a difference. I've seen a lot of people self-training their service dogs, or quote-unquote service dogs, and what they do is as soon as there's a person there, they like correct them, and they're like zap them or whatever, and I correct them. So that what happens in a lot of dogs is they start assuming that those people are bad or that dog is bad, and now they start becoming reactive to it. Where you just wanted to say to the dog in dog language, hey, ignore it. Don't pay attention. It's not important. You're now creating behavioral issues where that dog is going to go, oh, I just got corrected. I better be afraid of people. Or, oh, I just got, you know, zapped. So, you know, that's a bad person or that's a bad animal. So think twice about that and go into places that you're allowed to go. Socialize your dog out of vest mostly. Then when you start with your service vest, and this is obviously something that anyone who needs the service dog training, you can contact us, and we will be happy to help, 855-449-9288, and we'll be happy to help you. But go to places that allow the dogs in the first place. Then once you see that your animal is starting to behave, that it's not anxious, it can, you know, be calm in public, then you can start contacting, you know, like contact us. We can help you with that anyway from the beginning. But, you know, you can at least have an animal who's on its way to being stable and confident. Remember, we don't want an animal who's going to be overly friendly, but we definitely don't want that. Want one that's going to be afraid or that's going to be skittish. So be very careful what you do with that. So great question, Verna. Great question, Ron. And unfortunately, our show is over again. I don't know how this happens because it goes so, so quickly. But the key here for me, and I think is a good learning point for everybody, is be smart about things. Think them out. So we talked about service dogs, and we talked about sadness and joy and new pets and all these things. Now take this information you learned today and share it with your friends. Be a teacher. Tell them about our show and tell them about our great network. And let's help more people, because that's really what it's about at this season. Be kind, be forgiving, be smart, and be blessed. God bless everyone. Have a wonderful day.